In what seems to be a growing government trend of prosecuting outspoken supporters of Palestine, 11 Muslim students were arrested for disrupting a speech. In this case, that of the ambassador to the United States, Michael Oren. The incident took place last year on the campus of the University of California at Irvine. The local district attorney claims that the students had no right to disrupt the event, charging them with conspiracy to shut down the ambassador's speech, even though he was able to complete that speech. Supporters claim that the Muslim students' actions are protected by the First Amendment and that they are being charged for being vocal critics of Israel. Defense attorneys assert that the district attorney has acted irregularly, first by using an investigative grand jury to look into felony charges, even though the students were charged with two misdemeanors. Second, in the course of the investigation, prosecutors obtained vast personal electronic records from Google and Hotmail. They then released some of these documents to the media in what appears to be an attempt to influence public opinion against the 11 students. Joining us now to talk about the case is one of the attorneys for the Irvine 11, Daniel Mayfield. Welcome, Dan, to Law and Disorder.
Well, it's nice to be here.
Now, I know in the National Lawyers Guild and here on Law and Disorder, we've heard a lot about the so-called Irvine 11. Can you briefly describe who they are?
The Irvine 11 are 11 students, 8 from the University of California at Irvine and 3 from the University of California at Riverside, who were arrested on February 8th, 2010, during a speech by Michael Oren, who is the Israeli ambassador to the United States.
Now, this was a campus event. It was a relatively peaceful disruption, wasn't it?
As far as disruptions go, it is about the most peaceful that you could ever imagine. What happens is that Michael Oren is invited to speak on campus. It is a hybrid event. He is partially sponsored by off-campus organizations and partially sponsored by on-campus organizations, but it is an official campus event. There is, however, a private reception beforehand, and that ends up being important to the case. The people who are at the private reception have access to the meeting room prior to the event. So when the event begins, the people who've been at the private reception, supporters of Mr. Oren, are all in the middle of the auditorium and close to the front. People who then have not been at the private reception, which would include the 11 defendants, are allowed to come in, and then they have to occupy the sides of the auditorium away from the speaker. When Mr. Oren begins to speak, he speaks for, say, roughly a minute or two. The first of the 11 defendants stands up and interrupts him, makes a statement about Gaza and the Israeli invasion of Gaza. That person then walks to the edge of the auditorium and submits to arrest and is removed from the auditorium.
Let me clarify, is the arrest by campus police or is it local law enforcement?
There actually are roughly 5 law enforcement groups present. The actual arrests are carried out by campus police. But there are campus police, Irvine police, county sheriffs, Secret Service agents, Israeli agents, the Diplomatic Protection Service, which is an arm of the Secret Service. There are a large number of law enforcement agencies present. In any case, Mr. Oren then starts his speech again, and he speaks for another 2 minutes or so, and the next student stands up and makes a statement. There's a large amount of jeering, clapping, people both opposed to Mr. Oren, people opposed to the students get involved. This happens 11 times. After the 11th student stands up, all of the students who have come in, all of the students who are opposed to Mr. Oren, then stand up, start a chant, and they leave.
Okay.
Mr. Oren then finishes his speech.
And so then, as I understand it, the university launched its own investigation shortly after, concluded that investigation probably June of last year, and then the district attorney undertook its own investigation and recently has charged the students with disruption, conspiracy to disrupt.
Both, two misdemeanors, the conspiracy to disrupt and actually disrupting the speech. So the University at Irvine and the University of California at Riverside have separate investigations of their students, and the students are internally disciplined. The Muslim Students Association at Irvine is ordered off campus for 6 months, and by June, everybody thinks the case is over.
Right.
And about that time, the district attorney's office begins their own investigation. They send out an investigator to interview people. In December of 2010, the district attorney's office of Orange County, now remember this is Orange County, California, one of the most conservative places in America, they convene a grand jury. Now, under California law, you can only convene a grand jury if you are investigating a felony. They claim that they're investigating a felony. They pray for and get search warrants from a judge. You don't have to go to the judge and say, I need a search warrant. In their affidavits with the search warrants, they swear under penalty of perjury that they're investigating a felony. They call witnesses to this grand jury. When they are challenged, they tell the judge that they are investigating a felony. And then the grand jury does not issue an indictment. Now, it's unclear, and we don't know the answer to this yet, for whether they're even asked to issue an indictment.
Could it have been the so-called political fishing expedition to get more information on these individuals?
That's very, yes. Their term for it would be an investigative grand jury.
Right.
In that sense, not that different from what's happening in Chicago with the grand jury that involves the Palestinian activists in Chicago and Minneapolis City Hall.
Right.
So then, at the close of the grand jury, the DA has amassed all of this material. They have gotten phone records and email messages. They have illegally...
They've asked these individuals to turn that over, and they did.
No, they asked Google, Hotmail, Gmail, all of those email companies were served with search warrants.
Right.
Saying, we are investigating a felony, turn over these emails from these students.
Oh.
And they do. Thousands and thousands and thousands of emails. 10 CDs of emails.
Oh, that's phenomenal.
They issue subpoenas to the university for the students' internal files. Now, your files as a student are protected under California privacy law and federal privacy law. The university rolls over and supplies these internal files directly to the grand jury and to the DA.
Was there an attempt made to intervene and have the university file a motion to quash?
Well, we didn't know about it.
Oh, I see.
What can you say?
Got it.
If we had known, we might have done something. But remember, grand juries
operate in
secret.
Secrecy, right.
And people are told, this is secret. You cannot discuss it.
Right. So the university couldn't disclose that they'd received that.
The university should have come in and fought it, frankly.
Right.
But they did not. Don't know why. Presumably they were just intimidated. So you have this whatever, grand jury, investigative fishing expedition. It's not clear. But they don't, in the end, do anything.
The grand jury, right.
They don't vote on an indictment.
Right.
They don't issue what's called a true bill.
Right.
Charging anybody with anything. Then, 363 days after the event, and remember there's a one-year statute of limitations on misdemeanors, 363 days, two days before the statute runs,
right.
The district attorney's office issues a complaint for two misdemeanors. Conspiracy to disrupt a speech and actually disrupting a speech. And they charged the 11 students then with two misdemeanors by complaint. And here we are 2 months later.
I understand that the phrase disruption comes from Section 403 of the California Penal Code, and that's what they've been charged under. And it says that it's illegal to disrupt certain kinds of meetings. Does that have anything to do with political meetings?
The code section specifically speaks about meetings that are not political or religious.
It's not okay to interrupt a religious or political meeting.
Those meetings are governed by different code sections.
Oh, I see.
There is a specific code section about disrupting religious ceremonies. There's a specific penal code section for that. So that's excluded from this general code section. And as far as political meetings are concerned, that's actually covered by a couple California Supreme Court cases which hold that if you are going to be involved in politics, you have to expect that people are going to heckle you and disrupt, as long as it's not, you know, violent disruption.
Right.
That you have to expect that there's going to be heckling at a political meeting.
And interrupting.
That's part of what it's about.
Right.
Heckling, interrupting. We've seen a lot of this lately with the Tea Party going to public meetings of members of Congress. President Obama was interrupted, of course, during his State of the Union speech a year ago. It's that kind of thing that you, if you're going to be involved in politics, you have to be willing to hold the floor. That's the problem here.
So, Dan, is the goal here to avoid a trial and to get the district attorney to drop these charges?
I would state it a little differently. I don't believe the district attorney is going to drop these charges. They've dumped roughly $500,000 into this case.
No. Into the investigation?
Into the investigation, the grand jury. They've assigned, at this point, three deputy district attorneys, including two of their primary homicide DAs.
Homicide?
Homicide DAs. We're not dealing with brand new misdemeanor district attorneys who are in the office for...
These are veteran members of the department. Oh, my goodness.
We have veteran homicide district attorneys pulled off of homicides to work on two misdemeanors.
And so clearly this has, whether or not we can deem this a political meeting, the whole case has significant political import.
Definitely. But our goal is to win this case on motions.
And what does that mean for our listeners?
That because the meeting is political, because political meetings are excluded from the penal code section that we're interested in here, that we believe that we can win this case by arguing on the law before the judge that they do not have the right to proceed. We're bringing several motions that have to do with that kind of thing, in particular what's called a demur, which is sort of similar to a motion to dismiss, saying that they do not have the right to proceed as they have done.
Now, I understand that the district attorney has spoken out publicly about this case. Can you talk briefly about the kind of media attention it has received?
There's been a great deal of media attention. The various parties have been on national public radio nationally and locally in Los Angeles. The district attorney himself appeared on Fox News nationally talking about the case. There have been interviews, of course, with all kinds of media outlets. Most recently, the district attorney assigned to our case, so the deputy district attorney assigned to our case, made a 15-minute long infomercial that has been placed on YouTube.
Dan, let's talk about UC Irvine for a second. I understand that 100 of the faculty members there did sign a petition asking that the DA drop these charges. Is it a hot issue on campus?
It's a very hot issue on campus. It's not, by the way, 100 professors at UC Irvine. It's 100 professors throughout the university system. There are 10 campuses of the university who signed, it's 100 Jewish professors, actually, who signed a petition to the district attorney and to the president of the whole university system, asking them not to proceed with criminal charges. On campus at Irvine, this has been, you know, a hot issue now for a year and a half.
Yeah.
And there are editorials in the paper and continuing demonstrations and discussions on campus about this now for 16 months.
It's part of a disturbing trend that we've seen around the country over the last several years on academic campuses where, unfortunately, often pro-Israeli factions apply pressure to either fire faculty who speak out about injustices. Were you surprised that this happened at UC Irvine? I understand you're an alum of that institution.
Yeah, I was. I did graduate from Irvine. I graduated in 1974. I started in 1967, so as my father referred to it, I was a slow learner. When they've had a series of incidents at UC Irvine, and for that matter, a series of incidents around the whole University of California campuses, all 10 campuses, the boycott, divest, and sanctions movement has members on all campuses. It's been something that's been coming up in the student senates all over. The speech by Michael Oren was specifically thought of as being a response to the organizing around the BDS work. And that's why it was this hybrid speech where they brought in outside groups as well as on-campus groups to sponsor the speech. And David Horowitz has written about Irvine in particular and put it on his Campus Watch webpage. So I was not surprised at the response that occurred. I was surprised, frankly, that the district attorney's office got involved 6 or 8 months after the event and started their own separate investigation. I'll just go back to that. Everybody truly believed that this matter was over in June when the students had been internally disciplined, the organization had been put on notice, and it was over as far as the university was concerned.
In the matter of misleading the grand jury into thinking this was a felony investigation, is there any recourse after the fact to charge the DA with abuse of authority?
Well, I don't know so much about the question of charging the DA with abuse of authority, but it does mean that they have gathered evidence illegally. It's even though they used a search warrant, that you can attack the search warrant. So we essentially will be arguing that the judge who signed the search warrant was lied to.
Right.
Therefore, the search warrant is no good.
Right.
Therefore, the information gathered by the search warrant should be suppressed.
Fruit of the poisonous tree, as it were.
And, right. So the in that sense, the illegal grand jury or the illegal parts of the grand jury should not be used in this misdemeanor case. One of the problems we have is that the district attorney's office has all this material. They have been selectively releasing it to the news media.
The information that they obtain through their subpoenas?
Yes.
That sounds highly irregular.
It's very irregular, and one of the first motions that is going to be heard is a motion to recuse the district attorney's office. In other words, to remove them from the case.
Yes.
And that's going to be heard in June, and part of that motion is that they have acted irregularly, that they've engaged in misconduct by releasing or selectively releasing items from the grand jury, which are supposed to be secret, which they are in possession of, and
right.
We're not.
Right.
And to try their case in the media.
So exactly.
We're doing our best to move against that, and that motion will be heard in mid-June. This Friday, we have motions having to do with sealing the grand jury to make sure that nothing else gets released illegally, and hopefully to get a court order against the district attorney's office in terms of their irresponsible media statements.
Dan, I had no idea that this was such a dramatic series of events. How many other lawyers are working on this case with you?
That we have 8 lawyers on the case now, 11 defendants. So probably by the time we get to trial, we'll be up to 11 defendants and 11 lawyers.
Got it. So it really will be the Irvine 11 in every sense of the word.
A good group of people, so it's very exciting.
We are thrilled that you're able to take time out to really so carefully go over the case with us. I appreciate that. And we wish you the best of luck and hope to be having you back on Law and Disorder when we can celebrate a victory.
Looking forward to it.
Great. Dan Mayfield, right. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you, Heidi. Bye.